We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second? Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
2019, you said you started, you did your first flip. Mm-hmm. Was that, when did you start buying rentals again? Because obviously you've scaled that up as well.
I did my first rental after the third flip. So after the condo, I did a single family. Finally, I did the flip right. I was like, praise be. So then I put those profits into a fourplex in Petworth. It's like Northwest DC. And that was my first four unit that I burred, which is the, I don't know, you talk about this, the buy, renovate, rent, refinance, repeat. Mm-hmm. So I did that, gutted it out. I had like watched this property for like 8, 9 months because it was in foreclosure. It was listed on the MLS. They wanted a certain amount of money for it. So you could bid on it online. It's not like auction. It was just owned by the bank. So I watched it. And then by the time I could bid on it, by the deadline, I wasn't even the highest bidder. I was just the highest bidder at the deadline. So that was my first four unit. And I had also met someone who was like, if you want to get into the game of burring properties, you need to learn how to add value. And he was like, the easiest way to add value is to find a vacant home because you can then turn your four, like three bed or one bedroom units into three bedroom units. And so you add value that way by increasing the rent. One bedroom might rent for $1,000, a three bedroom will rent for $3,000. So going back to me finding a mentor and asking questions and, hey, come get coffee with me. I really want to try this. I knew some friends that have done this. So I watched that deal, ended up speaking with him. He gave me some lenders to reach out to. I learned how to make a pro forma. And again, there's multiple mentors and players that helped me along the way. But a really big purchase like factor with this was having a pro forma. Pro forma is huge. I still use it to this day. I mean, when you're thinking about long-term investing, you don't know what your like NOI, which is your net operating costs, are until you know every single expense. Worst case scenario revenue, worst case scenario, you know, monthly expenses. So your pro forma illustrates how much you're making per month and also annually. And then it shows you how much you're paying for electric, you know, water, taxes, insurance, property management fee. All of that is in your pro forma. So you see your bottom line. So I use that pro forma to figure out what I need to offer on the property at. I think I answered your question.
You did.
I'll be rambling.
No,
so
keep
I don't
going.
I'll be like, what was the question?
No, don't worry. Don't even worry about the question. I keep going.
Yeah. Okay.
This is good.
Yeah. But people had like, you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad talks about burring. I was like, man, this sounds cool. But one of my friends, he was in commercial real estate, so he did it for a while. He's like, yeah, like look at buying vacant and turning the one bedrooms to three bedrooms, and I leased them with voucher tenants, and I learned that market very quickly with that first four unit. I had no idea what I was getting myself into on the management side. I thought I could manage it myself. I'm comedian of the year for that, but no, I couldn't. But I learned a lot about just like the subsidy market in DC, it's a great market, but I think you got to know what you're getting yourself into, but you also have to lead with value. I hate when I see developers put like lipsticks on a pig and like make their properties not livable for a quick sale. And it's like, at the end of the day, people are going to be living in these properties. Like, I take a lot of responsibility in that. Like, everything from foundation all the way to the roof, it's got to be done right, because somebody's child is going to be here. That falls back on me. And so I take a lot of care and concern, especially when I'm working with my team, to make sure these properties are built right. And especially with subsidy housing, DC government is not tenant friendly. They also don't play games. So you have annual inspections every year. So your properties have to be in tip top shape. Doesn't matter if a tenant messed it up or not. You've got to really make sure your properties are maintained or they'll stop paying you. And you've got to have good systems in place with your property managers. You got to have good communication systems with your PMs. You also got to really understand how to find your tenants, work with tenants. And there's got to be a level of compassion when you get into developing properties, but also like subsidy housing. I could talk about that for days, but I think people just see money. And I think it's better when you shift your vision to seeing this is a life, this is a family, this is serious. Let's take it seriously. The money will come, I think, when you focus on the craft and the end consumer and the end tenant. But that's how I got started in 4 units.
I love that. So, a few things. So, how would you define pro forma?
It's essentially, we'll call it like all of your revenue minus all of your expenses. That shows you your net operating income. And then it'll show you your cap rate. Your cap rate is essentially the percentage of your return on investment per year. You get that, you get the cap rate by dividing your net operating income, which is your revenue minus all of your expenses, that's your NOI, divided by the money you invested or whatever you purchased a property for. Cap rates, ideally, so like you invest in the S&P 500, I feel like that's not my arena, but I think it's 6% return, 5-6 or something.
8 to 10 on average or something like that.
Oh, now it's higher. See, I don't know. But typically with your cap rates, you want them to be, a good cap rate is like double digits. That's ideal. Nowadays, DC is like a 5-6 cap market. The deals I like are 8% and higher. Those are really, because that shows you your return on your investment, like the S&P 500. So I hope that, answers the question. Yeah,
it does. It does. You also mentioned that the home, this 4-unit, was a foreclosure. So is it just as simple as eventually it's going to be up for bid and basically sold to the highest bidder?
Yeah. So typically with foreclosures, especially in D.C., not all markets are competitive like D.C. So there's opportunity to buy foreclosures and not be competing. I've been to auctions where like one person was only one bidding on it. So it's definitely a possibility in foreclosures. This one just happened to be an online bid, which makes it a little less tense, but it's like refreshing your page all the time to see what the next bid is. But it was on the market for, I think, like 5 months, and I just watched it. I reached out to the listing agent with love letters, like, not, they're not love letters, they're just like, I really want this house, and they can care or not care. But I feel like I manifested that because I thought about it a lot. Anyway.
Made it happen. What are some misconceptions that people have about Section 8 from your perspective?
Misconceptions. I think the biggest misconception is that it's too hard to handle. It's not worth the money. It's a headache. And that could be a true concept. But it also can be a misconcept if you're not doing the right measures on the forefront. I think with Section 8, you have to be aware of what type of tenants you're picking. And you also want to be aware of fair housing laws. I worked with a woman who found all my tenants, and she would advise me to, you know, just be cautious of it. There's a lot of families with domestic violence, so with like abusive partners, that you want to watch out for, because that ends up being issues for every other unit in the building. Things like that, you want to look out for. You know, just there's a lot of things that I can't always say in public, but it is, I was advised on this by someone who worked with Section 8 for like 20 years. And she told me things to look out for, like emergency tenants. I think something that I can say, though, is you ask for your referrals, but I've also had landlords who have just told me their tenant was amazing, and I took them and they ended up being the worst tenant in the world. So some people just pass them up so they can get rid of them. And it's just, sometimes it's kind of tough, but I think a lot of the times I'm meeting tenants face to face, I'm kind of gauging their energy, their level of respect, the level of cleanliness, and kind of taking it from there, because you do have to abide by fair housing laws too. But you do your background check, your credit check, your income. My income I don't really do income because it's subsidized, but I always talk to the landlords prior, their current landlord. You know, how were they? Were they clean? Can we get the maintenance done? Stuff like that. But yeah.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.